What happens when a sweet boy soprano voice hits puberty? No, he doesn't automatically become a baritone. The Cincinnati Boy Choir is working with a team from Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center to study vocal changes. Boy Choir Director Chris Eanes is in the studio with me, recovering from jet lag after 2 weeks with the Boy Choir in Australia. Welcome back, Chris.
Thanks so much for having me.
How was it?
We had a great time. We performed 9 concerts in Sydney and Brisbane and a beautiful little port town called Port Macquarie.
Did they come back saying good day? Good day?
Came back with all sorts of souvenirs, music, not the least of them.
Tell us what the purpose of this study is and how it came about.
As you know, boy choir singing is a 1,000-year-old tradition. It's one of the earliest traditions that we can trace in Western music. Of course, boys who wanted to become priests would go and join the church, and all of the singing in church was done by the monks, and so the boys would join them there. Over the years, that tradition, of course, has blossomed into a beautiful tradition of Western choral music all the way through today that continues to thrive, and particularly in the United States. But what we have not updated is our understanding of how those boys' voices work. And you'll still find in some countries, in Great Britain especially, and also in, you know, Austria and Germany, their church choirs are largely populated by boys and men. There have been several people over the years who have studied the external aspects of the male voice change. But as of yet, nobody's really gone inside and looked at the boys' vocal cords and all those sorts of things. So in order that we have a better understanding of the boys' voice and a better understanding of how to work with the boys, we decided to do this study together.
How did Children's Hospital become involved with this?
Children's Hospital became involved because, first of all, they focus on children. We approached their speech pathology department, and they immediately found this project intriguing and worthwhile. And one of the reasons they said is that they have the opportunity often to study sick children's voices, but not often to study healthy children's voices. And we were providing them with this option. Having the option to look at a healthy child's voice allows them to make comparisons when a sick child comes in and know, you know, how they can treat it or what that should look like. So they jumped at the opportunity, and also the opportunity to study boys over time, which is what we're doing through this. We're not just looking at each boy once, but multiple times as he goes through puberty.
And I remember from my years in choral singing that when that squeak came, they were out of the choir.
It's funny, you know, I wasn't in a choir when I was young, but I remember the day that my mom said to me, "Are you sick? What's wrong with your voice?" And I, "No, that's just how I talk now." And there's this misconception, I think, that the voice change happens sort of one day. And certainly for some boys, it happens very quickly. But one of the things we've come to understand is that it's a much longer process than that, that really lasts for years. We understand now that well before you hear any audible change, particularly in a boy's speaking voice, that there are physiological changes going on that we can start to see.
And what will the role of the boy choir be in this study?
Well, we're the ones providing the boys for the study, of course. And the idea is that we're able to, for a boy that comes in our program, he might be 6 or 7 years old, and he may not enter the study right away then, although we do have some that are on the younger end. But as an 8 or 9-year-old might enroll in the study and then participate for 4 or 5 years and really get an understanding of his own voice. And then in the aggregate, we can look at all of the data and look at some of the individual exams and say, well, you know, what has this boy undergone? So our hope is that what we end up with, and we're already starting to gather some really fantastic data, but what we'll end up with over the course of years is a set of best practices that we can share with all those teachers and choral directors out there who are working with boys.
And who are some of the participants on the Children's Hospital side? Who's leading the team up there?
Dr. Alessandro de Alarcón is one of the leads on it, as is Barb Weinrich. And we have a wonderful woman, Wendy DeLeo LeBourne, who is very active in coaching singers from CCM and working with them on vocal health and does a lot of work nationally on that topic. So she's one of the researchers as well. So it's quite a big active team that is working on looking at all of this information and figuring out what it means.
You were talking earlier about 6-year-olds coming in and doing this for the long haul. How long has the study been going on, and how long do you see it lasting?
We enrolled about 21 subjects in it last fall. And of course, it's all voluntaries, so none of the boys have to do it, or, you know, it doesn't affect their enrollment in the boy choir. It's more for their interest in helping us out and the excitement of being part of a big study like this. And we don't know when it's going to end, frankly. We're going to enroll some more boys right now. And one of the things we've realized after doing it for a year is that, of course, as with anything like this, you end up with more questions than answers. But at least now we're starting to narrow down what those questions are and how we might be able to approach them.
And when the medical team is working with them, what are they looking for? Are they hearing them sing? Are they doing...
So they do two things. One is called a voice range profile. So the boys all have to go in and sing the Star Spangled Banner. One of the things they're listening for is, does the voice break in there? Is there an audible voice break? Can they reach all the notes? What is the quality of the voice and things like that? They chart their range. So what's the lowest note they can sing and what's the highest note they can sing? And then, and this is one of the most exciting parts, is they get scoped. And not being a medical doctor myself, I'm not going to explain it to you in technical terms, but basically they stick a camera up your nose and it goes down the back of your throat and looks at your vocal cords. And then you sing. And so they can observe your vocal cords while you're singing and look at the vocal folds as they interact with each other and see what's happening, which is really, really exciting science. It's all in HD and full color, whether you want it to be or not.
And clearly girls don't have to go through this same kind of voice deepening, do they?
Well, you know, the voice change in girls is still rather prominent. Except that because the range of their voice doesn't change as much, you don't hear it quite in the same way, but they do undergo a change. We tend to focus on it in males more because it really affects the range in which they're singing and, you know, their section in the choir. I mean, if your voice changes, you might go from being an alto to a tenor in a matter of weeks.
But you can still sing.
But you can still sing. And, you know, really what it comes down to is us being able to enable boys and young men to continue singing into adulthood. If you think about it from the perspective of an 11 or 12-year-old boy, he might start to struggle to sing because his voice is changing. And if not handled correctly, you know, you put that against the fact that his friends are all going to play football and he might say, all right, I think I'm gonna leave the choir now, and we'll be pretty sure that he's not coming back. So by providing boys with the tools to continue singing really well, we can ensure that, you know, they're going to keep doing it and maintain that love of it for their whole life. You know, at the Cincinnati Boy Choir, we keep our boys all the way through the voice change, and they continue to love it and sing both in their high school choirs and in the boy choir and all the way into adulthood. And so we think it's just a valuable skill that all boys should have access to.
What are some of the things you do for the boys when they're going through this vocal change? I mean, how do you cope with that? Because as a director, your hearing has to be so exceptionally sharp to hear that.
Well, yeah, you know, after working with the boy choir for so many years, I can tell sort of the minute a boy walks in a room what's going on. They go through that period where they'll grow 6 inches in, you know, half as many months, and you go, oh, something's coming here. But the first key is that you talk about it, that it's not an off-limits topic. Because we're all boys in the room, every single one in the room is going to go through it. And the guy you're sitting next to might not be there next week. He might have moved down a couple chairs because his voice is changing. So I do regular voice checks with the boys. They know where they are and they know what to expect. And, you know, when a boy is about to change from soprano to alto or alto to tenor or tenor to bass, you know, we have that conversation that, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, it's coming. And they sort of nod and they go, all right. And some of them look forward to it and some of them are sad to not be singing the high soprano notes anymore, but it's inevitable.
Well, we look forward to hearing a lot more updates on this study. And you can find out more by going to our website, wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. My guest has been Christopher Eanes, the director of the Cincinnati Boy Choir. For WVXU, I'm Ann Ehrenstein.